You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hi, I'm Brett.
And I'm Steven.
And we are
the Broadway Husbands.
We're just your all-American married couple making their living in the arts and pursuing a growing family. On the Broadway Husbands podcast, we offer advice from our ordinary lives under extraordinary circumstances.
We are living proof that you can love who you love and love what you do. Make sure you subscribe to our podcast so you don't miss our weekly episodes. And if you really love us, make sure you leave a review on whatever podcast platform you listen to us on. Take a screenshot and tag us on Instagram at Broadway Husbands.
And make sure to check out the Broadway Podcast Network. We are proud to be members of BPN. You can see all of their amazing array of Broadway-themed podcasts at BroadwayPodcastNetwork.com. Okay, I'm super excited.
I'm very excited.
I'm trying to contain it because I don't want to be like a total freak show.
I was also kind of nervous that I was going to mess up because I was like, oh my God, this is so fun.
But we have a guest today, and her name is Dee Dee Magno Hall. And she was on the Mickey Mouse Club when I...
when we were both.
I am totally fangirling. Yeah. And I'm so happy to have you here. Welcome, Dee Dee.
Thank you so much, Brett and Steven, for having me. I just happened to be in my closet, and I just pulled this out, this OG sweatshirt from in the day.
Yes.
Because your audience can't see, it's a Mickey Mouse Club sweatshirt that I snagged from my parents' closet when I went visited them last. But it's so lovely to meet you.
It's so great to meet you
online,
virtually, and you still look exactly the same. Like you look beautiful and just fantastic.
Well, you are very sweet to say that. It took me just 2 hours to put the space on filters and the selfie stick light. What do you call it?
Let me just paint the picture of how much, and we're going to dig into this, but like how much influence you and that group of people had on me in middle school. I watched every day. I mean, I literally came home from school, watched every day. I dreamed of living the life you were living. And I wrote a letter every week. And I had, you probably know about the postcards they would send to people who wrote with the photos. I had a stack of them from every letter I wrote.
Oh my gosh. That is so sweet. That is so sweet.
But I remember they called one time, whoever the programming people were, called my house because I wrote so much. And they said, what would you do if a Mickey Mouse Club member came to visit you? Now, I lived in a small, small town in Texas, right? So I was like, oh my God. Oh my God. Well, we go shopping at the mall, and then I take them to dance class, and they go do play rehearsal with me, and then we like sing songs, and then we'd like play in the backyard, and we'd swim, and they were like, okay.
And then that's when they decided not to give you the surprise.
No. I would have loved to have done all of those things with you.
Oh, thank you. And Steven has been singing The Party all morning.
Yeah, I've been singing The Party all morning. I've been looking it up, and I knew that I had the cassette tape. I was definitely a huge fan. I don't know that I was like that obsessed, but I was definitely obsessed. And I had the cassette tape, and I remember I think I sent in for something. So I had like some sort of like Mickey Mouse like book. It was like a, you know, just like something that was stapled with all everyone's photos and things. And I definitely wrote once too, because there was something like, write to us and tell us who you'd like to meet or something you'd like to do. And I think I wrote that I wanted, at the time I still hadn't moved to New York yet. And I wrote that I wanted to take ballet class with Mikhail Baryshnikov, which ended up happening, but just not through the Mickey Mouse Club. But
oh
so like
God.
Dreams do come true, but you know,
yes.
So,
yes.
So I was a
that's
huge
amazing.
Fan.
Amazing.
Yeah.
So that's our story. How much you've impacted our lives, even though we're just now meeting you.
Even though we're just now meeting.
I can't tell you.
How have we impacted your life now?
Oh my goodness. Well, to be honest, just you saying what you said, just about how this little show that I had been a small part of way back in the day, has impacted your life in such a positive way, and it also has some things to do with what you do in life today. And it's I can't tell you how touched I am to hear that. And I've heard it every once in a while from different people that I meet, whether it's at the stage door, from doing one of the shows that I had done, or just people that I meet randomly in the industry who are now in the industry, saying that they had they had grown up watching the show, or they had the cassette tape or whatever. It really is. It blesses me to hear that, because when we're in it, when I was in it, when I was doing it back in the day, I was not thinking about the impact that it could possibly have for people. I only know that what I remember as a child, sitting in an audience and watching Miss Saigon, for instance, when I watched Miss Saigon for the first time, and sitting in the audience and seeing somebody on stage singing this beautiful music, and I could relate only because this young woman looked like me, but I just remember being in that moment and being inspired and just wanting to do that. I'm like, I want to do that. And then, years later, having that opportunity it's so nice to, it's like a circle, it's all like everybody's inspiring everybody. And then so on and so forth. And that is, that inspiration continues.
On that subject, I got to see you play Kim when it came to Houston.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
With Matt Bogart.
1990. Matt Bogart. Yes. Yeah. My very first.
I got my equity card working with Matt Bogart like years later after
amazing.
Meeting
him.
Yeah. But wait, going back, before you auditioned for the Mickey Mouse Club, were you hopeful to pursue a musical theater career, or like what were your goals and dreams before you auditioned for the Mickey Mouse Club? Young.
Yeah.
Kid.
Well, when I was little, I grew up in San Diego, and what's the show? Oh gosh, Rags to Riches. It was a musical show back in the day. Do you remember that?
Yes.
I love that show. And then I would watch Kids Incorporated. Yeah. And coincidentally, I went to school with Mario Lopez, junior high school in San Diego. And so I was inspired by watching those kids singing and dancing and acting on television. And I entered, a local singing contest in San Diego, much like American Idol, but it was local, obviously. And people would call in and try to vote in their favorite singer. And at the time, I was 11. And the prize was to sing at a nightclub. And, being 11 years old, that just wasn't going to happen. So I ended up opening a new attraction at SeaWorld, and it was televised. And then with that, somebody saw me performing. New York, New York was my go-to back in the day. So I always loved, Broadway tunes, but I listened to everything growing up. My dad just would play, everything from, the Jackson 5 to the Beatles to Elton John and Billy Joel and Madonna. And, I grew up with Whitney Houston was my idol, when I was younger. And so I always knew that I wanted to perform, but I didn't know how I was going to do it. So my very first professional job, and I did some local singing and acting and dancing and at school. And then I also was part of the Just Say No to Drugs and club, back in the day when we would perform at schools and churches and things. And so, But my very first professional job was the Mickey Mouse Club. And so that brought me and my family to Orlando, Florida. Okay. And that was my introduction to television and, you know, music and acting. And it was like Saturday Night Live for kids. So we got to exercise all of those things. And then Fred Newman, who was the host on the Mickey Mouse Club, introduced me to Miss Saigon. And he was the one who sort of planted that seed for musicals and theater. And then when the party was on tour in London is when I saw Miss Saigon. It's not Broadway, but what do they call it?
West End.
Yes. So that's when I fell in love with theater.
And there's nothing like it. Did you see Leia Salonga perform Kim, or who was performing Kim when you saw it?
So I thought I was going in to see Leia Salonga because I was obsessed with the original soundtrack. Yeah. So Leia, I think, was the alternate of Kim was on that day that I saw it, and she was wonderful. Honestly, it could have been anybody. I was so just like entranced by this live theater musical experience, and it just took me on this journey. And I just remember leaning over to my mom, who's watching it with me, and I said, "Mom, I want to do that. I want to be that. I want to do that role. I want to play that role." And she was looking, and she thought, "Ooh, she's thinking about the skimpy clothing and the love scenes and the, you know, the dancing on the poles and all that." And she says, I think I was about 15 or 16 at the time. And she says, "I think you need to wait a couple more years." And then fast forward to when I auditioned, finally, I was 18, 19 years old in Los Angeles. And I had already finished doing Sister Act 2. And I really was just, I was auditioning for everything. And that was my, you know, my sort of, I don't know what you call it, my stepping, what I'm talking too much now. I can't remember what
Not. Wait, because one of the things that just fell out of your mouth that I forgot to mention before we started was oh, right, you were in Sister Act 2 also. another I think for people our age, just one of those movies that we grew up loving, absolutely loving. How, was that just a blast to film? How was that?
It was so much fun. I mean, it was so much fun. And, you know, I originally auditioned for a bigger role for that film. There were, in fact, the whole party auditioned for that movie. And we had speaking roles, and we all had little stories and, you know, background stories for our characters, and what they went with was Lauryn Hill's her story. Right. And I became one of the classroom kids, but man, that was such a fun experience. And it was such a time. I mean, I think I was 17 or 18 years old. 17. Oh my goodness. It's all, I'm 17. And we filmed it partially in Los Angeles and partially in San Francisco. And, you know, the fact that the movie is now on Disney Plus, it's so cool that I could just, reminisce and go back in time and just remember such a cool experience that was.
So cool. So cool. So let's go back to this Miss Saigon. So Miss Saigon kind of happened after that. And what surprised you about, because that's a major role to get through Kim. I mean, you have an alternate for the matinees, right? But, you know, doing six shows a week as Kim, what surprised you from being in the audience and being like, "I want to do that, Mom," to then actually doing it? What was that experience like?
Well, I was just telling this story not too long ago, but originally I was offered to replace a cast member in the Toronto company. And after I auditioned, I think I had three auditions, and they had offered me an understudy, maybe an understudy to the alternate of Kim, and then I would be in the ensemble in Toronto. But at the same time of the start of rehearsals for me, it was there was a planned family trip to the Philippines that my family had been planning for years. And so I had to make a really tough decision whether or not I was going to go along with my family to this, to have this trip and or live my dream, you know? And so I thought long and hard about it, and I chose to go on the trip with my family. And then it ended up being a blessing in disguise, because months later I auditioned again for the Second National Touring Company, where they offered me the role of Kim. So I got to actually play Kim and originate the role on the Second National Touring Company. So it was, I mean, I did not know what to expect. At that point I had the only stage production that I'd ever done before that was, Fagin's Gang and Oliver, my junior high school play, you know. And so, the whole rehearsal process, you know, the whole, you know, we had four weeks in New York during the winter at 890. And it was like one of the harshest winters, I think, back in that time. That's what they were saying. I had nothing to compare it to. I grew up in San Diego and Orlando, Florida, so snow was very new to me. And then another like two weeks to maybe a month in Seattle, where we opened. But it was really a rigorous, this role was by far the most challenging, vocally demanding, and emotionally draining role that I had ever had to play. You know, even to this day, just the emotional roller coaster ride that she goes through from the beginning to the end. And what I love about theater is that you start and you just keep going until it's done. No matter what happens, you know, the show truly must go on. Whether the helicopter decides that it doesn't want to land, or, you know, set pieces don't come together, the show and the story still must be told. And that's what I love about theater, just because that whole live aspect of it. It's not stopping and starting. I miss it so much. I know. This has been such a rough time for our community.
So I know you've done a lot of other theater.
Yeah.
Like you did the Wicked First National, right?
Yes.
But I also know that your husband has done a lot of theater as well. We've made some assumptions, like maybe you met on the tour of Saigon, or maybe you did Wicked together, but where along your path did you guys meet?
We actually met, we were two of four of the youngest cast members for the Second National Touring Company of Miss Saigon. So we met in 1995.
Oh, wow.
We were 19, and you know, we were fast friends, I think, because we were the four that were not of age, like of drinking age. And so like when everybody else after the rehearsals would like, let's go grab a drink, or let's go to this, that, and the other thing. We just couldn't. We were like, okay, well, let's go play pool or watch a movie or, you know, something like that. And so we were fast friends, and so we've known each other for years before we started dating in 2000. So we stayed friends for a really long time. We watched each other, you know, experience life and love, and then we just kept in touch. And then when we found each other back in New York again, because he had left the touring company to go do Les Mis. And then I left to go to Broadway, and then he left Broadway to go on tour again. And so we kept crossing paths, but we just stayed in touch. You know, well, there was a little bit of flirting here and there. There's definitely attraction, but you know, we lived our lives, you know, we sowed our oats, And then we met back up in New York again and started dating and thought, oh, are we going to ruin this wonderful relationship, this friendship that we have? And so we kind of, you know, struggled with the idea of dating because we didn't want to ruin that friendship that we had. Mm-hmm. And then we were just like, let's just give it a shot, you know. We just tried to make sure that our friendship wasn't ever compromised. But
it's so interesting. We always say like we were friends first.
Yeah, we were friends
before we dated as well. And I think it creates such a cool foundation for the relationship. Don't you think?
Absolutely, I love it. And you know, they say that not to where you eat. You know, they say that. But I feel like because we met and had the same group of friends, we have now these friends that are supporting our relationship also, and they're friends for life, you know, and a lot of them were at our wedding, you know, and still really close today. So, and there's nothing, and you guys know this too, there's nothing like a theater family. There just really isn't. And so I think that's what I love about our relationship, A, that we do have similar interests, that we were friends first. And also both my husband and I are both believers. And so we have that foundation as well. And that we have a lot of the same friends. So, it is really a wonderful, wonderful thing to be married to your best friend.
Yeah. Well, going back to when you first started dating, who said I love you first? Was there
Oh my goodness.
Was that like a big moment, or was that just like something that just kind of happened, you know?
I want to say that he said it first.
And were you quick to say I love you too, or like how
I may have thought it first, but I think maybe he said it first. He'll probably say the opposite. I definitely knew I loved him, though.
Like pretty quickly, like once you allowed that to happen.
Well, the thing is, I already loved him as a friend.
Right. Right.
So it was not difficult to love him further.
Right. And did you guys ever play Chris and Kim opposite one another? Were you guys ever?
Yes. He was in the ensemble at first in the second National Touring Company. Then he bumped up to be an understudy, but we had never done the show together on the tour. And then he also, he also understudied, I believe, on Broadway, but we still never did the show together. And then there was an Asian touring company that arose, and there was a handful of people that were from the States, but the majority of the cast members were from the Philippine production and the London production. So John Briones actually was in that production as well, and his wife. So that's how we met them back in the day. Actually, we were also friends from like mutual friends. The Saigon family is very big. We got to work with John and Megan, his wife, in the Asian touring company. And that's where Clifton actually was playing Chris. So we got to play the roles together, which was such a dream. First of all, we had our rehearsal period in Sydney, Australia for 2 weeks. Yeah. It was amazing. The production company was from Sydney. So they flew everybody to Sydney for the rehearsal period. So you can imagine, it was such an amazing time. And then we were in Hong Kong for 3 months, and then Singapore for 3 months.
Wow.
It was really amazing. Such an amazing time.
That's magical. Were you dating?
We were dating at that time.
Okay, so that's fun. Good. Yeah,
so they were saving money on housing. We were, you know, we lived together.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary, and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. Suf's The Original New Musical from Shana Taub is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
And then also, did you perform, you were both in Wicked, was he Fiero at the same time you were Nessa Rose? Or like, how did that work? Were you guys in the show together for that as well?
Yes. Yeah, so first of all, I just feel like it's been such a blessing to be able to work alongside my husband, so many different things. But we had just had our first child, and he was offered the understudy and ensemble for Wicked, the first national tour. And we had friends on the tour already. And they were the ones who kind of were like, hey, audition for this part, because, you know, Adam Lambert. I'm trying to think of if he was replacing Adam, or if he was, or Adam was in the, I can't remember. Adam Lambert had something to do with it.
Yeah.
He was and then there were other cast members who were, they were, interchanging. They were, bringing some people in. And so he got the tour, and I was like, we just had a baby. This is an amazing blessing. Let's pack up our lives. I'm totally content. Mom, wife, we're going to go see the country. And, you know, and I'm just going to, you know, bring my baby along with us. And so, you know, cut to 18 months later, Jen Waldman at dinner one time says to me, I'm leaving. You maybe, if you want to, you can maybe talk to your agent and say if, you know, if you want to audition for Nessa Rose. And honestly, I wanted to be back on stage again, but I was totally happy with our lives. I was singing the show like every little road trip that we took. I felt so bad for my husband and my son, because I was like, you know, in the car, you know, on our road trips, and, you know, dreaming of being Elphaba one day. But so it didn't really occur to me to audition for the show, because I just thought, oh, well, that was my life then, and this is my life now. But the opportunity arose, and when Jen told me that, I talked to Clifton about it, my husband, and he says, go for it. Well, you know, what have you got to lose? Really, what have you got to lose? If you don't get it, then we're still on tour together. We're still, you know, traveling together. And so I did. I went in for Nessa. And then, like, weeks later, my agent called me. He was like, congratulations. And I was like, you've got to be kidding me. You've got to be kidding me. So then at that point, my husband had bumped up to play the part of Fiero. And then I came in to play Nessa shortly after. And, we flew in my sister, my baby sister, to help us with our oldest. At the time, he was only two. And mm-hmm. so, and she was helping our little guy while, helping us with our little guy while mommy and daddy were playing make-believe on stage. So it was such a wonderful experience.
So it sounds like you and Cliff can, when are you going to cut an album together?
Together. I want to hear When are you guys going to make an album together?
Yeah. The only album that I think we've ever recorded together was for our wedding, our giveaway. It's so cheesy, but, you know, we like recorded a little album, and we'd put a little CD on everybody's place, you know, at the table.
Incredible voices. I would love to hear that.
Oh, well, he has a very lovely voice, a very, very high tenor, you know, But, and he's also got dance moves because, you know, I don't know if you remember Star Search back in the day. He was on Star Search as a dancer first.
What? That's amazing. Oh my God, I'm going to have to look that up. That's amazing.
Code 808. Yeah, he grew up in Hawaii and his dance. I don't know if this was way before the interwebs. So good luck, Brett. I don't think you're going to
always make it somehow. Okay.
Yeah.
And speaking about talking about just being a parent, going back to those, like, you know, those 2 years you were on the road in the beginning, what's one piece of advice you could give to a new parent? You know, something that you didn't know that you wish you knew then, or something that you learned quickly?
You know, you can read all the books. You can get all of the advice from your parents, your friends that have kids. But until you actually are holding this baby in your hands, there's no way that you can prepare for something like that. You know what I mean? And everybody is so different. The way that you're going to parent, or the way that your child is going to respond to your parenting, you don't know. You won't know what works until you try it out. And maybe it works for the first couple months, and then everything changes, and then you've got to adapt to something new. So I think I would probably have told myself to relax, that it's going to be okay, not to stress out over the little things, because really, a lot of the things that we stress out about are little things, and all those little things can add up, you know. So to definitely nap when the baby is napping, to not worry so much about the laundry piling up or the dishes piling up. And, you know, I think that my main thing I would just tell myself to relax, and that it's never going to be perfect. It's never going to be perfect. And you're also never going to have enough money. Mm-hmm. And it's okay if you make a mistake. It's okay. My children, I feel so badly saying this, but both of my children have fell out of the bed. They are fine. They are fine. But, you know, I probably would have maybe made sure that that wouldn't happen next time. You know what I mean? Like, I think that's what it is. I think it would just be to relax and not to take it so seriously, and just do the best you can. Whatever that is for you, do whatever is your best, and then, you know, let it be. Let it be.
Amen.
But yeah.
Love that.
That was great.
So what do you think, Cliff? Does Cliff go by Cliff or Clifton?
Clifton. And never Clifford, like the red dog.
No, he's Clifton.
Yeah.
Yes, he's Clifton with two Fs.
Two Fs. Yeah.
What does Clifton feel, I mean, about you having such an impact on so many people's young, you know, childhood? I mean, he must get tired of, like, oh, here we go with the Mickey Mouse Club thing again.
No, it's so funny. He grew up in Hawaii, and he was more familiar with the Roundhouse than the Mickey Mouse Club. So he did not have the Disney Channel. So he had no idea what the Mickey Mouse Club was. He had no idea about the party, and which I kind of love. but, you know, when I am trying to celebrate, I'm like, we're in the 30th year anniversary, and the party just came back out on iTunes, and you can ask Alexa to play it. And he's just like, oh, that's cool. Hey, what are we going to have today? You know what I mean? It's like not that big a deal, but I love it because it sort of brings me back down to earth. And you know, he does celebrate with me. Don't get me wrong. He's such an amazing, supportive husband. And I feel so very blessed. I'm like, is he listening to me right now? But I love him so much. He really is such a blessing in my life. And like I said before, he is my best friend, and I could tell him anything and everything. And I do, maybe I talk too much. but yeah, he's all I can say is that he's been absolutely 500% supportive of everything that I have done and everything that I continue to do. You know, this is our livelihood, you know, entertainment. This is how we met. This is what we know how to do. This is what we can't imagine ourselves doing other things. You know, although he is taking a little bit more of a break from entertainment, he's finding interest in real estate and building and that kind of thing. We're still artists at heart. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, this, like I said, is our livelihood. And we have been blessed to have been able to support our family through the things that we do and the things that we have done. And so, you know, I just, I'm hopeful. This time has been so crazy for everybody. But I'm hopeful that we're going to come back strong. We just have to keep on doing the things, you know, to not stop. We just have to keep going, but stay positive, you know?
Yes. So do you want to ask about swing? We want to hear about swinging on the mouse.
Oh, yeah, swinging,
let's hear about
swinging,
it.
Swinging with the mouse. Swinging with the mouse.
You're swinging on the mouse. It says swinging with the mouse. Come on, volume one. Volume one.
Well, so I am singing, oh my gosh, what is it called? I'm singing from Tangled, Mother Knows Best.
Ooh.
Mother Knows Best. So Pablo Rosario, see, I'm not going to say his name right. Pablo Rosario, because I only call him Pablo. I'm so sorry. I had it. And then
Pablo.
Like,
it's like,
okay.
It's like
a more name. Yeah. All right.
Pablo.
So I met Pablo at LA Table and Stage, Rockwell. And he helped me produce my first one-woman show in many, many years that I had ever done in Los Angeles, because the last time I did it was like way back in the day in Orlando, Florida. But he helped me produce, along with AJ Raphael, a very good friend of mine, at Rockwell. And so that was my connection with Pablo. And then months later, that was the last time that I had actually been on stage in front of an audience. This was early January or late January this year. And Pablo reached out to me during the quarantine, and he asked me if I could lend my voice to this project, where it's more obscure Disney songs or the less popular songs, and it's two swinging jazz music. And I thought, yes, please. Yeah. He actually sent me a rehearsal of him singing Mother Knows Best, because he has a lovely voice, by the way. He's on the soundtrack as well. And he sent me a sample of the song with the band, and I told him I could not stop dancing. I just love this music. And so if you can imagine some Disney songs to jazz, swinging jazz music, then that's what this album is all about. But we are having a For Your Consideration, what do you call this? It's like, it's a virtual event.
A virtual event.
And it is a presentation for your consideration for a few Grammy Awards, you know, the possibility of getting some Grammy Award nominations. But we're up for consideration for best traditional pop album, best arrangement, instrumental or a cappella, and best arrangement, instruments and vocals. But it is happening October 4th at 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. and it's on a Sunday, and there's a lot of wonderful people involved. If you'd like, I can read some names. Okay.
Yeah, that would be great.
Keith David, Emma Hunton, Garrett Clayton, Courtney Reed, Frankie Rodriguez, Jennifer Stone, Janaya Mahalani-Jones, and Michael Leon Woolley, who's a good friend of mine, too. But yeah, so yes,
ML. We'll put links in the show description.
Yeah,
please do. And like I said, Pablo is also singing and in part of this for your consideration presentation as well. But I'm so happy to be part of it. Yes, thank you. Yeah. So it was really nice to be on a stage again. Of course, it was not, it was social distance and it was not in front of an audience. But it really was nice to just be performing again. Yeah. Yeah, so I'm with you guys. I miss it a lot.
Yeah.
I miss people. Wow.
Yeah.
Well, we can't wait to go listen and hear this album. But now we want to move it to our segment that we call
Spotlight on Love.
I love it. I wore a shirt says love.
Ooh,
perfect.
This actually belonged to my mom.
Aww,
back in the 70s.
Yeah, that's so cool.
So cute. Spotlight on love. Okay.
So we have a fan, a listener, someone on our Instagram. We usually ask people to write in if they have a certain question about relationships, dating, or even family stuff. Because everyone's dealing with family these days during COVID. Yeah. And we have them write in any questions they might be dealing with right now. And then we have our guests and we will offer unqualified advice to help them solve their questions.
So the question is from an anonymous person. They wrote, how do you deal or do you even deal with someone who is emotionally unavailable? Especially if you seem to like each other, is it worth it to pursue? Or should you observe the red flag and move on?
Oh my goodness.
You get to go first, Edie.
You want me to go first? Okay.
Yeah.
All right. First, I must say that I am not a professional.
That's okay.
But I have to say, if you know right off the bat that this person is not emotionally available, I think it is safe to say that people don't change. Let me rephrase. If you think, and that's not true because people can change. People can change. Absolutely. People can change for the better. But that is absolutely up to the individual. If you think that you're going to go into this relationship thinking that you're going to change that person, or this person has so much potential, and maybe if they just haven't met the right person, and maybe I'm the one who's going to blah, 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 then I think maybe that's not your job. It is the individual that has to make those changes within. I feel like if you do know that right off the bat, I think maybe it's probably best to take a step back and maybe be a friend, maybe be a friend first.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, I think the answer is in your question. the red flag, the red flag is up. Yeah, definitely move on. Don't waste your time. Maybe you can give yourself a day or two to like kind of stay in that feeling of like, is this a possibility or not? But just know that you should move on because there's so many other people out there that are available and would just be such a better match for you. And then you wouldn't have to worry about having to not receive, what you're looking for from this person who can't give it to you.
Right. Yes. Yes. Yeah.
Yes. And my question is, what is it about you that's making you question it? Because if you're like, why, if you believe that you deserve someone who's available, then why are you questioning? So my question for this person is like, what is it about you that doesn't believe you deserve someone who's emotionally available if you're questioning this? Like, You deserve that. Mm-hmm. So there should, you should just be like, yeah, this isn't the one. I'm going to find someone there.
Yeah.
That's what I'm curious about.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So move on. Take a look at that red flag and remember that it's up.
And you can be friends.
Yeah.
And in fact, like, just like Didi said, like, be friends because you might actually help them as a friend more than you would as a partner.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Good luck.
Yeah. Good luck. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, Didi, you are just a light.
Yeah. This has been so amazing.
You are a light on this earth. You gave me hope and faith in middle school, and talking and meeting you today has given me hope and faith.
Yeah.
As an adult. And I'm just so grateful that we got to meet today. It just means the world.
Yeah, it really does. Thank you for agreeing to come on to our show. And it was a pleasure having you here. And we're just so grateful to have met you. So thanks for being here.
I am so grateful to have met you both. And I'm so touched by what you said. But I just want to encourage people to, you know, because there's a lot of things that are going on in the world that are beyond our control. But what we can control is how we respond to things and the choices that we make, right, from day to day, even from hour to hour. But I do. I want to say thank you so much for having me. And I wish you all of the best in everything and all of your, your endeavors in life and in love and in your future together and with this podcast and with everything else to come. Stay hopeful and continue to spread that love and joy that you clearly have. So thank you so much for having me, you guys.
Thank you. And everyone, follow Didi on Instagram. Where else are you?
Oh, I'm on the Twitter.
Uh-huh.
I have made a couple of TikToks, but that's it. Really, not that much.
We love watching your kids dance with you. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So make sure you go follow Didi. We'll put links to all of her social media in the show notes below. And to all of our listeners, don't forget to love who you love
and love what you do.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.